Thank you. That was wonderful. What a great group of people. All I did was mention The Wizard of Oz, and all this music just showed up. It was great. It was great. Thank you very much for having me back. It's wonderful to be here. Before we get into the sermon this morning, or as you call it, what do you call it? The reflection, sorry. The second reading is an excerpt from Kung Fu Panda. And if you haven't seen the movie, Oogway is a turtle. It's animated, by the way, right? There are no talking turtles. And Shifu is a red panda. And they're arguing about whether Kung Fu Panda will ever be the dragon warrior. Kung Fu Panda. I brought my Kung Fu Panda. I wasn't going to come all the way here with him and then leave him. It's probably disrespectful to put him in the bell, but that's where we'll put him. Okay. Oogway, my friend, the panda will never fulfill his destiny, nor you yours, until you let go of the illusion of control. Illusion? Yes. And he points at the peach tree. Look at this tree, Oogway says. I cannot make it blossom when it suits me, nor can I make it bear fruit before its time. But Shifu, the practical person, or in this case, practical panda, kicks the tree and peaches fall and says, see, I can control when the fruit will fall. He slices a peach and he throws the pit to the ground. I can control where to plant the seed. That's no illusion. Oogway says, yes, but no matter what you do, that seed will grow to be a peach tree. You may wish for an apple tree or an orange tree, but you will get a peach tree. But peaches cannot defeat the ultimate evil. Folding the dirt over the peach, the turtle says, maybe it can, if you're willing to guide it and nurture it and believe it. But how? I need your help. No, you just need to believe. Promise me, Shifu, promise me you will believe. And the little panda, who's having trouble teaching the bigger panda to be the dragon warrior, says, okay, I'll try. So, has anyone seen Kung Fu Panda? Oh, yes. Ooh, sparse number of people have seen Kung Fu Panda. Okay. So, let's do the 30-second review of The Wizard of Oz, right? Okay. So, The Wizard of Oz, most people have seen, correct? The movie, right? Okay. So, The Wizard of Oz, big storm, house up, dropped into the Land of Oz, happens to land on the evil witch, kills the witch. Dorothy is blamed for this, which is sort of like blaming a passenger on a bus for a bus accident, but whatever. Good witch says, you want to get home to Kansas? Go that way, follow the yellow brick road. She follows the yellow brick road, meets a bunch of weirdos along the way, creates a little pack of people, gets to the Wizard of Oz. Wizard of Oz says, sorry, can't help you unless you do this magical task. Go do this magical task. She goes, the four of them go, the weirdos and her, go, and they do this magical task, come back. Turns out the Wizard of Oz is a shyster, which is a New England word, but do you know what that word? Yeah, you do. Right? It's a con artist, right? He accidentally sends himself back to Kansas, leaving Dorothy at home. Along comes the second witch, says, all you had to do was click your heels, you had it in your power to go home all along. To which Dorothy just very nicely clicks her heels and goes home, gets home, tells her story. Now, a little bit different. There are significant differences between the book and the movie. If you haven't read the book, there are really big differences. In the book, Dorothy comes off as a hero. In the movie, Dorothy comes off as a little bit of a crackpot. Because she gets back to Kansas, and tells her story, and they go, oh, you were just dreaming, and that's that. The book, by the way, is not a dream. Quick synopsis, so that's The Wizard of Oz, right? Quick synopsis of Kung Fu Panda. And I put these two stories together because they are, I've always said they are retelling of the same story, okay? Poe is stuck in a dead-end job. Poe is a panda, stuck in a dead-end job working in his father's noodle shop. He's not super bright, but he's very loving, very loved, and he's very resilient. He absolutely loves these superheroes of his day, and he so wants to be a superhero. He gets trained to be the superhero, and in the middle of the whole thing, people become convinced that he's a dragon warrior. The dragon warrior is the savior, right? The salvific figure, who's going to save them from the ultimate evil, who in the movie is Tai Lung. He's rejected, then he comes back, and he convinces himself. And the way he convinces himself is he is able to open the dragon scroll, which is sort of like an Arthur story, right, where he's able to pull them. He's able to open the dragon scroll. And when he looks at the dragon scroll, what does he see? It's just reflective paper. All he sees is himself. So it's the same story as Dorothy in that you already had what you had needed. All you had to do is click your heels. You already had what you needed. The whole secret to become the dragon warrior was it's you. It's already you. Okay, so he defeats the ultimate evil. He's welcomed home as a warrior hero, and he's what one would call he's not a typical warrior, right? He basically becomes a hero by being resilient. He can take a beating. Is basically his super skill, right? And he's not particularly bright. And he's a great story. So these are retellings of the same story. And these stories, when put together, are what is called a monomyth. A monomyth was developed by a gentleman by the name of Joseph Campbell, who many of you have heard of. He did that famous interview with Bill Moyers. It was several hours on TV. And he went through the whole mythology. He was a professor of mythology at Sarah Lawrence College, which is a super liberal Warren Wilson type of school up in New York. And does anybody know, anybody from Sarah Lawrence? No. No. Okay. So monomyths. There are several archetypes in literature and in mythology. And these stories repeat themselves. These characters repeat themselves through time over and over and over again. There are 11 of them that are sort of documented. I'm not going to go through them all. But the one we're talking about today is the hero, the hero's journey. And this is the one that sort of made Joseph Campbell famous. Most famous was that his work was used as the background for Star Wars, right? I don't know if you know that. And Star Wars is super duper clean on its monomyths, right? So here's the monomyth of the hero. And when I tell you this sort of pattern, see if you can think of other stories that follow this same pattern in the hero. So the hero becomes known, and he is often, that was what was weird with Dorothy. She was a she, which is why they had to kind of write that out of the movie. That was a little bit socially unacceptable. The movie is very sexist, that the book doesn't have. So you get the hero, often unwilling or reluctant, right? The reluctant or unwilling hero. He goes on an adventure, not always willingly. The house, the storm picked her up and threw her into the Wizard of Oz. She didn't go on purpose. He gets there, he or she gets there, starts to go on the adventure, and at some point in the adventure, changes his mind. I don't want to do this anymore, right? At that point in the story, he normally gains a supporter or a mentor or a friend or something along those lines. He experiences some sort of challenges, like the trees grabbing. Remember when the trees grabbed them? And then the monkeys, the flying monkeys, right? Who can forget the flying monkeys? He finally, at some point in this monomyth, the hero hits rock bottom, And there's some sort of finality ordeal. If you think back to the Jesus monomyth, he actually dies, which is the ultimate, hitting rock bottom. A little bit of an overstatement, but transforms, comes out of rock bottom, finds some sort of reward for being the hero, decides to go back to the ordinary world, and then saves the day, and he brings something of value to the ordinary world by saving the day. So this is a very typical monomythical story that we see repeated over and over and over again, especially in mythology. And I will say up front that mythology is a risky word, right? Because one person's mythology is another person's religion. You got to kind of watch that a little bit, right? But here are some examples of this monomyth throughout time and mythology. So first is Luke Skywalker. If you've seen the Star Wars movies, Luke Skywalker is the typical, this whole Star Wars saga was built around that. And remember, they didn't think they'd make 9 movies, or whatever, 6. They thought they'd make 1. Jesus, this story repeats itself over and over and over in the Jesus story, right? So when he's executed, he goes into hell for 3 days, and then he comes back. What's that whole thing about going into hell for 3 days and coming back, right? That's the hitting rock bottom. So there's a theological statement there too, right? Death, that wasn't even hitting rock bottom for Jesus. No, no, no. Boom, there was one more. He went into hell for 3 days. And then more practically, after the temptations, he goes out into the desert, into the temptations, comes back to his hometown to preach. And what happens in his hometown when he preaches in his hometown? You remember? They look at him and go, "Who the hell are you? Aren't you her son? What makes you think you're so special? Get out of here." So he's rejected by his own people after sort of realizing his own power. So he goes out. Of course, the real one in the Bible, the real obvious one in the Bible, is Jonah. Jonah is swallowed by a whale, or a big fish, depending on which translation you read. And he's basically vomited up onto the beach. Right? So that's rock bottom. And what happens after he's sort of barfed up onto the beach? He becomes this great preacher, and he goes out and does what he was finally supposed to do, right? But it took getting barfed up onto the beach for him to realize. Moses, as a baby, is rejected by his own people, right? Put in a basket, sent down the river. Remember that story? These stories repeat themselves over and over and over again. Some people say Captain Ahab of Moby Dick keeps getting beaten up, keeps coming back. And Moby Dick, is symbolic, not exactly a whale, right? These other things, right? And then most recently, I was watching the Captain America movie, another superhero, who's buried at the bottom of the ocean for 40 years and comes back, right? So these stories repeat themselves through time. They are very transformative. They are very human. They are very, very human. When you see these stories repeated from mythology, the Greek mythology, all the way up to like a kids' movie in Disney, you know that they're significant. You know that there's something fundamental to humanity in them. Otherwise, they wouldn't be repeated so often. And this is anthropology, right? It's anthropology, it's sociology, it's psychology, and it's mythology. But this is a church. So why are we talking about sociology and anthropology and psychology? We should probably talk about churchy things, right? So let's talk about theology. Some people are shaking their heads. No, that's all right, don't worry. Don't worry about that. But let's look at theology. So these things, for me, these things all get mushed into a ball. It's hard for me to pull apart anthropology and sociology from theology. Okay? And I think we'll get to why in a minute. So we're going to look at theological concepts that ground these stories? What are the theological concepts that exist in these stories, right? And we're looking at theological concepts of an animated panda. So right at the top level, we're going to say that Revelation is not sealed, right? So that's a theological concept. Some theology believes that Revelation is sealed. If it ain't in the Bible, it ain't Revelation. We're talking about a panda, a kung fu panda. So let's just say that theology, or at least Revelation, is still pretty wide open for us, right? Or at least for me. So, two questions besides the Revelation being unsealed. So the first question is agency. The problem of agency is an age-old theological question. The second question is the nature of salvation. Now, a lot of you just went, ugh. Right? Salvation's a word that drives some of you a little bit crazy. So you have to define salvation the way you want to define salvation. I don't define it as avoiding hell, so you don't have to either. But you can if you want to. So these are the two questions I like to look into. The first question is agency. Agency. Agency is a pretty simple question that is never answered very well. And the question is basically this. How much of my own destiny is in my own hands? Right? By the way, I'm big on questions and light on answers. So I think answers are the easy part. Questions raise the doubt. I can tell you what I think about agency, but that's none of my business, right? And that's none of your business. You have to decide what you think about agency. So how much of your own destiny is under your own control? There are two theological concepts. There's all of it is under your control, which tends to be the liberal churches, right? And we're talking about Christianity here, but that spreads to Buddhism. It spreads to Taoism for sure, right? There's Taoism that very, very, very restrictive. And then all the way over on the other side, you've got the Calvinists who believe that before time started, we knew whether you were going to go to hell or not. We knew before you were born whether you were going to go to hell or not, right? So there's this wide range of agency is completely up to you, or you have nothing at all to do with your own agency, right? Okay. Then there are these stopping points along the way. Well, it's not just about you. It's about me and my friends. It's about you and your friends. What can you get done together in community? Then we start to sprinkle a little God in. Then we get to the point where it's about half you and half God, and then we make our way all the way over to the Calvinists where there's you don't really have much to do with it at all. So let's look at those ruby slippers for a minute. All you had to do is click those ruby slippers together, and you could have gone home. When were you going to tell me that? Why didn't you tell me that back in the Munchkin Land? We could have avoided all this with the trees and the apples and the Tin Woodsman. It would have, well, just, that's it. That's all I needed to do. I can imagine being pretty frustrated. At the end of the movie, when Glinda tells her all you had to do was click your heels together, if I were Dorothy, I'd have been like, say what? But she doesn't. How much of agency is in, so what is the theme of the movie? What is the theological basis of that moment right there, right? That it took all four of them to get her to, what Glinda says is, you wouldn't have believed me anyway. And my initial reaction was, try me. Yeah, exactly. Why don't you give it a whirl, right? I think at some point when the monkeys were carrying me, I'd have been whacking my heels together. At some point, I'd have believed it, right? But the point there was that just doing it wasn't enough. You had to believe what you were doing, right? So I know I'm getting theological on a children's movie, but the concepts are there. So what concept is underlying that statement from Glinda? You wouldn't have believed me anyway, right? Same thing with Paul. The same story goes through Paul. When he unwraps that thing and he looks at it, his reaction is, it's broken. It doesn't say anything. There's nothing here. It takes him a while to process it, to get to the point where he understands that I do have some agency in making myself the dragon warrior. So when you keep it to dualistic options, nice and neat dualistic options, you either have all the agency or none of the agency, it's very simple. You get to choose A or B. It's clearly somewhere in here, right? I think most of us, most Unitarians, most liberal Christians, along with liberal Unitarians, would itch it up a little bit and say, well, it's got something to do with me and it's got something to do with the people I'm around. Okay, which brings us to the second theological concept, which is the nature of salvation. This is one that I think Unitarian Universalism needs to work on. And again, big on questions, light on answers. Is salvation individual or is it collective? So let's get over the salvation bump for right now. Okay, you get to define salvation, not me. What does it mean to you? Does it mean being right with God? Does it mean being right with yourself? Sometimes I think being right with God might be actually easier than being right with myself, right? God seems a little more forgiving at some points than I am. So what does it mean to be for salvation? That's up to you. But is salvation individual or is it collective? When I think about this, I think about being a Boy Scout in high school. And I remember going on these hikes. We had a very outdoorsy Boy Scout troop. And I remember that there were the guys that were the hikers, right? They did this for fun. I did it because I had to. My mother said I had to. I liked it, but I wouldn't have done it individually. And then you had the kids. There were about 15 of us. Then you had the kids that really shouldn't have been there, like, because it wasn't safe for them. They were out of shape. They were klutzy. They were just not made for this, right? But for some reason, they went. They were probably forced to go. And I remember as a Boy Scout, one very simple rule. You're not done till everybody's done. It was a very simple rule, and it was mostly a safety rule, right? But that's the concept of collective versus individual salvation. Can you be saved if all your friends aren't? It's a real problem in theology, and it's a real problem, especially in Christianity, because Christianity likes to say stuff like, do you have a personal relationship with Jesus? A Catholic would look at you and say, huh? That's not even the what? I don't even understand what you're saying. For Catholics and for the Eastern Orthodox, that's not a thing. You have to go through your community to get to God. That's why the Catholics don't pray directly to Jesus. They pray to Mary, which of course freaks out the Protestants, right? Who believe that you can have a direct relationship with Jesus. Have you been saved? This is a question that doesn't make sense to millions and millions of Christians throughout the world, but it is a very American interpretation of salvation, isn't it? Right? You can look at America. If you work hard, right? The American dream. If you work hard, you will, whatever it is the dream is, right? I don't even know what the dream is anymore. But it's all about me. Unitarian Universalism itself is really conflicted on this, right? If you read our seven principles, half of them are collective and half of them are really individual. Individualism, I think, now this is an answer, individualism, I think, is going to be the death of Unitarian Universalism. If we can't get together and play nice, it's not going to keep going. It can't. as conflicted as UUism is, to the extent that you can say that it even has an opinion on things, is individual UUs can be even more conflicted individually, right? You can look at our seven principles. You have some people who are here because they don't want to be told what to think, right? But sometimes, and that's a good thing, I think that's a good thing, but sometimes that plays out in weird ways, right? I don't want to be told what to think. Oftentimes can end up being, I get to say whatever the hell I want, right? It's not the same thing. So there's a theology of community that gets sort of, that individualism gets in the way on occasion. But if you look at Dorothy, if you look at their path, every time the weirdos get in trouble, all four of them participate in them getting sort of free and on to the next thing. And it's actually if you really get into the movie, like even crazier than I am. And by the way, how did I get started on this movie? I took a class in high school. We had a class in high school, so I got into it way back then. You can really get into it. Like every time there's a question to be asked, it's the scarecrow that comes up with the answer. Right? Which way should we go? That way. Wait a minute, you're the one with no brain. Nobody stops to go. Right? And who's the one that's always crying? The Tin Man, the one with no emotion, right? And who's the one that always goes in first? He needs a little coaxing, but he'll go in first, and it's the lion, and you know. So there's all these things that build up to the end. So let me just, UUs are very good at finding the sacred in connections with each other. The question is, do we find salvation there? Again, you define salvation, not me, right? Do we find what we need, our wholeness there, or are we stuck back with just the sacred there? In other words, oh, that's nice, that's sacred, right? Or salvation, oh, that's individually important to me. I have to have this, right? Okay, so let's wrap up. Here's how I'd like to wrap up. There's this great scene in the movie. Dorothy has been sent on her way. She's going down the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. What's that song? Follow da na 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 na. And here she goes. And she's been told that all she has to do is follow the Yellow Brick Road and she'll get to Oz, the shyster. And she comes upon a three-way fork in the Yellow Brick Road. Again, Dorothy, being the soul that she is, says nothing. I'd have been like, what the hell? You told me to follow the Yellow Brick Road. There's three of them. Which one am I supposed to follow? In comes who? The Scarecrow. He does this goofy thing where he goes, oh, you can go that way, you can go that way, you can go this way. And Dorothy gets him down, but after being coached by the Scarecrow about how to get him down, right? So the Scarecrow knew how to get himself down. So here's a theological question. This is what happens to you, by the way, when you go to seminary. You watch these movies and you're like, I believe that's collective salvation. No. The Scarecrow. Now, this seems to be ridiculous, right? You know, who the hell, you know, follow the Yellow Brick Road until you get to the fork and then turn left would have been the right directions, right? And that's what they actually did. But here's the question. Is it possible that maybe all three of the roads went to Oz? And it didn't matter which one you chose. Would there have been, because the very next person they found, the very next the character they found, weirdo they found, was the Tin Woodsman, right? They found him just a little bit longer. What happens if they'd have gone right? They would have never found the Tin Woodsman. Maybe Glinda knew that that scarecrow was going to be at that intersection. Maybe Glinda knew, just go, you'll figure it out along the way, right? Or maybe it was completely random. Scientists, right, like to think that it's completely random, right? There's three choices, right? So that's the theological question I leave you with today. Maybe, just maybe, it's in the going that the answers are made known. Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road. May it be so, I guess. I'm not saying may it be so in such that you should follow the yellow brick road. Follow your own yellow brick road. And when you get to the fork, ask the scarecrow. Thank you very much.